Hey, this is Shane Malcolm.
And this is Jordan Schweitzer.
We're the creators of Boot Bags.
Fashionable, durable, washable. Boot Bags are the most convenient way to carry your cleats to and from training or games. Check us out at bootbags.us.
You're listening to the Forest Fancast Podcast. City ground, a mist rolling in from the trends. My desire is always to be.
Delighted to welcome to our Forest Fancast listeners a very special series of episodes under the banner Who are you? Something a little bit different for you lads, because I know a lot of you sit there and listen to particularly Jordan and I waxing lyrical about the good old days at the City Ground, and some of you might be confused about the players we're discussing. So given that we know that a lot of our listeners are American and might be new to the game of association football, and even newer to Forest itself, we wanted to give you a little bit of insight into those players who, though maybe not in inverted commas legends, were nonetheless vital cogs in the Reds machine down the years. You, of course, are familiar with names now, like Pierce and Walker and Shilton and Collymore and one or two others, but there are some cracking players who have donned the Garibaldi that we really want to spend a little bit of time talking about. So in this series, we're going to be taking a trip down memory lane for those Red fans who had the opportunity to see these players first time around. And for those of you who didn't, well, strap yourselves in. This is going to be a lot of fun. I keep talking about the we. Who is the we? Well, obviously, you get myself. Sorry for that. But I'm going to make up for it by revealing that my co-host is one of the most knowledgeable, insightful, and passionate Reds fans that there is. Broadcaster, commentator, and man with a seemingly endless supply of amazing pictures of himself with Brian Clough. I'm talking, of course, about one of our own, Darren Fletcher. All right, Fletch?
Yes, very good, Mark. Thank you. How are you? Thank you very much for the intro. I found some more pictures the other day in the loft that I didn't realise I got, and I look about 12 on there. So, yeah, they keep popping up here and there, the pictures.
Well, I love that you keep sharing them to Twitter. I love that you have no, you know, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, what your haircut is. I mean, no. You posted one the other day with a suit that looked about three sizes too big for you, but.
No, I had a body that was three sizes too small. Let's be right. And the thing is, I've managed to convince myself in all of this that whatever I looked like at the time, that was all the rage back then. Whether it was or not, I can't remember, but in my world it was. So somebody put a picture up the other day. I think it was the club, actually, Forest themselves, put a picture up of myself interviewing Stuart Pearce in the corridor outside the dressing rooms after a European fixture in the UEFA Cup season. So it would have been Malmo, Lyon, Auxerre, maybe Bayern Munich. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I've got similar clothes on to Stuart Pearce, so it's not actually too bad. So that sort of made me feel better, but only a little bit.
Yeah, my mum, I think she'd be married now, 21, 22 years. She sent me a picture on Messenger the other day of the wedding pictures, and I was dressed like Don Johnson. I had the jacket with the rolled up sleeves. I had the espadrilles. Oh, Fletch, it was not a good look.
Yeah, well, listen, we've all done it, and we'll all do it again. We all think we look okay now. You wind these back in 20 years, and we'll be the same.
So possibly.
It's coming. It's coming. Don't worry, it's coming.
Well, mate, I really do appreciate you joining us on this series of shows where we have an opportunity to spend time, like I said, waxing lyrical about some of those players who have excited us down the years. Again, I know our listeners are very familiar with some of those more storied names, particularly the team of 79 and 80. But there have been some really great players that have represented Forest in the last 25, 30 years. And I know you got close to several of them. And I'm going to be interested to hear some of the stories that you might have. So listeners, what Fletcher and I have decided to do is we have taken a player each. We've taken one each from the 80s, one each from the 90s, and one each from the noughties. This episode is going to be focused on the 80s. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time just discussing the players we've picked, talking about their Forest careers and their impact at the City Ground. So, Fletch, I think you are kicking off our series, mate. Who do you have from the 80s?
Well, it's a difficult one, this, because I'm kind of coming at this from a fan's perspective, because my broadcasting career started in 1990. So the 90s and onwards is where I have a personal connection professionally. And I know the individuals a lot more than some of the guys in the 80s. So the 80s were players that I would go and watch. I'd stand on the Trent end and I'd buy a ticket and I'd be there for the games. So I kind of look at it from that, but I picked a player myself for this episode that straddles both eras. That when I started covering Forrest as a teenager in the 1990s, he was still at the club. And I'm going to go for Franz Carr, the winger.
Carr, getting the header well. Franz Carr sets off on the chase, close, finds him. Now then, chance for Nottingham Forrest. He's beaten great for pace, little shimmy. Yes! Nottingham Forrest get back into it. Franz Carr with a beautiful goal. Aston Villa 1, Nottingham Forrest 1. And it was the ball from club to fill the danger. And it's into the goal, 1-1.
Exhilarating, frustrating, talented, annoying, clinical, wasteful, all kind of rolled into one. But whenever you saw Franz play, you never ever saw him have a dull game. I mean, it was always the story. Well, I mean, the big thing with Franz was he could beat anybody as in a 1v1 or a 2 against him. He'd find a way through. Tremendous dribbling ability, very, very exciting on the ball. An out and out, right-sided, old-fashioned winger. Would take the ball from the midfielder or the fullback, and the first thought was, I'm going to go and run at the defender. I'm going to try and make something happen. The problem with Franz was the delivery, that he was very hit and miss in terms of sometimes he'd get a cross in that was accurate that led to a goal. Sometimes he'd score. But more often than not, he'd shank it into the Trent end, or he'd overhit the cross, or he'd try and beat another player and then lose the possession. And the famous old story was that they had to knock the old Trent end down and build the new one that looms large over the stadium to keep the ball in when Franz was crossing it, because he had a tendency to shank one into the Trent end. But he was one of those players that whenever he got the ball, you could feel it in the stadium. Whenever he got the ball in the final third, you thought, there is a legitimate chance here that Franz is going to score. And the thing was, it wasn't only about him on the field. He seemed to have this running battle during his Forest career with Cluffy over money in the main. And I think his dad was his agent, or certainly a big influence. And that was something that Brian wanted to control and couldn't control. Mm. You know, he wanted to control Franz, and Franz's dad wanted to be involved. So it always led to a very fractious relationship. So Franz was in and out of the team to a large extent, and in and out of favour. On a pretty regular basis, due to this constant battle behind the scenes over what Forrest thought he should be paid and what Franz actually wanted. To the point, I think, that when we got to the early 90s, he was actually playing on a week-to-week contract. He was still only in his 20s. And he was actually signing week-to-week contracts. Now, you imagine that today, just wouldn't work.
No.
So that essentially means that at the end of every week, he was free to leave. So This was zero security for him for injury. I mean, if he'd have got injured during that time, Lord knows what would have happened. But also from a Forest perspective, they were in no way controlling their assets. So, but he was also one of the nicest fellas. He was well-spoken. He was polite. He'd always say hello. He didn't often do the media because he was constantly in a confrontation with Cluffy. So he had to be careful what he said, but he was always one that'd stop and have a chat. And I don't think that he gets the recognition that he deserves as an impactful player at the time. And I think that's because, I mean, when they got to the League Cup final in 89, they played Luton. Mm-hmm. Tommy Gaynor was on the right. It wasn't Franz. Yet you go into the 90s and Franz is still there. But those big moments, those big games, he tended not to be involved. Yet you go back to some of the big games that got them to the Wembley finals and Franz played a big part. But whenever it came round to that picking the 11 for Wembley, Franz never seemed to make the cut.
Yep.
So I think he's a little bit of a forgotten man in that regard, that he's not in that Wembley 11 that you directly talk about. But he made a really big impact, I think, in terms of performance for Forest to get there and, of course, in attaining decent league positions. But I just found him fascinating because he was the epitome of the hit-or-miss winger. He was brilliant 1 minute and diabolical the next. And there just never seemed to be anything in the middle. He was either on or off, hit or miss. And I used to love watching him. But I can remember walking away from the ground many times, involved in conversations along the lines of, why the hell is he a professional footballer? Because he had all these opportunities and everybody's saying, I could have crossed it there. But you see, Franz always felt that he got it into a little bit more. But when it came off, boy, did it come off. There was a game at Stamford Bridge. I think Forrest had two hat-tricks in the game. If memory serves me correctly, it was Webb and Birtles. Both scored three. Forrest got six at Stamford Bridge. And I think pretty much Franz Carr made five of the six, if not all of them. Mm. And he was literally unplayable that day. And when he was on, the best fullbacks in the country couldn't cope with him. So I thought I'd choose him today simply because, you know, he's got that enigma tag. Yet when you look at him, he was more influential than a player that you would tend to describe like that.
Yeah, I think if you look in the dictionary under the word mercurial, you're going to find a picture of Franz Carr. I mean, I think you summed him up perfectly. The notes I have here, Fletch, are in capital letters, pace. I mean, just pace, like you said. Absolutely.
Pace to burn, but only slight. Very slightly built, not a long strider, very explosive, mm-hmm. very slight of build. I'm trying to think of a comparison today, but very, very slight player. Probably similar in height to Jerdan Shaqiri at Liverpool, mm-hmm. but certainly not built like him. Very, very thin. No. A little bit of a will-o'-the-wisp type, but very, 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 very explosive. And there's a story that one of the players told me that I'll recount to you now. So Cluffy had a big thing that, and he's right, that if you pass the ball, you can move the ball quicker, and it's mm-hmm. obvious. Mm-hmm. The ball moves faster than the man.
Right.
So this particular training session, he stopped the session. And he said, Franz, come and stand next to me. So Franz jogged over. So he said, Franz, I want you to run from here to him there. Run. Go. So off went Franz. Right, come back. So he came back. He said, Franz, I want you to pass the ball from there to there. Go. So Franz passes it. Which was faster, Franz? You or the ball? And Franz said, the ball gaffer. He went, very good. Play, that's coaching. And that was his coaching. He was trying to teach him that if he passed it instead of running with it, Forrest could play faster.
Yeah.
But you see, people always used to say Brian Clough never coached. But he would class that as coaching. Mm-hmm. He would say, look, that's coaching. We don't need to put cones down and do it 50 times. He now knows that if he passes the ball that distance, instead of trying to run with it, we can do it faster. And he would say, that's your coaching.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about it, he's right.
Yeah.
That is coaching. Now, a lot of coaches, modern coaches, would do a three-hour session based around that, where he's told you in 2 minutes. And of course, if you're Franz Carr, and that's happened in front of all the team, you're not going to forget that. So whenever you've got the ball now, you're thinking, hang on. I know on that again on Monday. So you're then thinking, right, I'll pass it. I mean, in all honesty, the message never really got in, did it? But at least it was what he tried to do with him, to try and make him a little bit more of a high percentage player, because he was, as I say, a 50-50 kind of guy.
Yeah, but very exciting. Like you said, when you players with that kind of pace, I'm thinking about guys down the years who've worn the Garibaldi. Dean Saunders came to mind, Darren Huckabee certainly is another one. Jean-Claude Darcheville for the handful of games that he was there. Ribeiro, I think, if you look at our current roster.
Yeah, I think he's the fastest I've seen Darcheville. I don't think I've seen a player that could run like him. He couldn't play. I mean, he was cracking. I mean, he was mad. But he's was built.
Yeah,
I went to a Christmas do with the Forest lads, and it was fancy dress. And he turned up as a cowboy, and he got a pair of tight jeans on, and he got no top. And he'd got a white leather waistcoat with a sheriff's badge, a hat, and a gun and holster.
Okay.
Okay. And the arms on the guy, I mean, you've never seen anything like it. As a specimen, he was off the scale. Really, really nice guy as well. But speed, raw speed, I've never seen anybody as quick in a forest theme as Darshfield.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, one of those players that would always excite you, that always get you out your seat, because he'd skin someone and you think, oh, wow, here we go. Something exciting is going to happen here. And invariably it didn't. Yeah. But, you know, the Clough story is a great story. And there are so many great Clough stories and Clough quotes, half of which I think he never said and maybe weren't, you know, have been attributed to him down the years. But of course, there's that great line that he's supposed to have said in regards to Franz Carr, where he called him the best bloody corner flag hitter in the country.
Yeah, well, there you go. And you see, if you think about it, the two players that kept Franz Carr out of the team at that time were Gary Crosby and Tommy Gaynor.
That's right.
Two more players that could quite easily have fitted into this category today. But the difference between those two was there was a little bit more end product. Mm-hmm. So Tommy wasn't a natural wide player. Tommy was brought into the team as a centre forward and was sent out there to play on the right. So, of course, Tommy would then do whatever Tommy was told. And Tommy was very good. And we saw this in the League Cup final against Luton. Tommy was able to make goals because he had no pretension that he was going to run past anybody. Tommy would get the ball and want to play it inside because he was comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
Gary Crosby was skillful like Franz. I don't think as good a pure winger in terms of a talent. Mm-hmm. The thing with Crosby was there was a bit more of an end product to what he did. So Franz paid the penalty in the end of two players being around and being available. But just when it came to actually delivering the ball, were a little bit more likely to do it than he was. And I think that, you know, allied to the, as I said earlier, the constant money issues that he seemed to have with the club. I think that those were the two big reasons why he didn't play a hell of a lot more games in big, big situations and have an even bigger reputation in there than he's got now.
Yeah, you mentioned the cup final in 89 against Luton. And as you mentioned, Carr played an integral part in getting the team to that final, didn't line up in the final itself. The following year, 1990 versus Oldham, he did make the starting 11. But you're right, he just didn't seem to be a go-to player in those big situations, whether Clough didn't trust him or...
Well, he tended to need somebody not to be available for big games like that. Then he'd get in. Where with the talent that he had, you would think that it would be the other way around. That he would be playing unless there was something wrong. But that didn't... The thing with Brian wanted players that he could rely on. He would sooner take a player slightly less talented, but one that he knew would give him the consistency and would do certain things at certain times. He liked very good, fundamentally sound players. Mm-hmm. So people, when they talk about NFL players today, for the guys in America, we talk a lot about fundamentals, don't we? You know, people say he's a fundamentally sound player in terms of he's a wide receiver, he runs very good routes, and the depth of the route is right, and the quarterback knows where he's going to be, and the timing works and everything else because he gets the fundamentals right. And Brian was huge on that. So if you look at what he wanted a team to be, he wanted central defenders to head it and kick it. That's all he asked. Mm-hmm. And if you got time, you would give it someone who could play better than you. So if you've got time to knock it into midfield, do it. If not, head it and kick it, because your fundamental job is to keep a clean sheet. Fullbacks, defend. It was a bonus in a Brian Clough team if the fullback could go forward. He would never criticise you if you didn't do that, but he would criticise you if you did it and then you let a goal in, because fundamentally, he wanted defenders to defend. He was a massive fan of Scott Gemmell. Now, the reason he liked Scott, and before that, the reason why he liked John McGovern, was that they would take the ball in any situation. They never hid.
Right.
So he expected a central midfield player to receive the ball in any situation, all of the time. Anybody can do it when you're 3-0 up. Can you have it when you're 3-0 down? Now, Scott and John would have it in any time, whatever circumstance, and he admired the bravery. Mm. So, fundamentally sound. That's what he wanted the central midfield player to do. The winger, he wanted the winger to get wide and cross it. Simple. Get wide and get across it. This is where Franz struggles, because he get wide, don't get the cross. John Robertson down the other side, he gets wide, gets the cross in. Cluffy loved him. Centre forwards had to be brave. had to get across the near post, had to play with a back to the defender, had to be prepared to receive the ball with your back to goal where you know you're going to get a kick. So he liked players with solid fundamentals. And I think when you look at the players that have been successful for him down the years, the ones that have had consistent runs in the team, the ones that have played a lot, all of them are fundamentally sound in the position that they're being asked to play. And that was always the key component. And it brought consistency by doing that.
It's interesting. You mentioned you didn't get Franz on mic very much. If you scour YouTube, trying to find him in interviews is almost impossible. Even trying to find footage of him playing for Forest, even though he made over 130 appearances, is really difficult. But the little bit of footage I did watch, Fletch, I was reminded of something which I always found to be kind of strange at the time, which is that he played mostly right wing. Obviously, his crossing was, flip a coin. He waded in with 17 goals, though, during his time for Forest, most of which were scored with his left foot. Do you think he was more inclined, particularly with the speed he had, to say, I'm going to go to goal, I'm going to try and get this goal for myself, as opposed to picking his head up and trying to find that good cross?
I think part and parcel of it is if you played on the right side, if you're going to score a goal, and let's agree on this. The one thing Franz liked to do was possess the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't particularly like to let it go. So if you're a right winger and you're playing on the right, if you want to cut in and shoot, you tend to have to come in onto your left side. So I think when you see a lot of the goals that Franz scored, he kind of takes the fullback towards the penalty area, and then you see him fake to go on the outside, come back onto the inside onto his left foot and score across the goalkeeper.
Mm.
I was watching one of the season reviews the other day while I was having a run, and he played quite a part that year, and most of the goals he scored were that goal.
Yeah.
Left foot across the keeper, far post, and that's what he did. So, I mean, he was a right-sided player. I mean, there was no real competition on the left at that time had he been needed out there. So I think if he was better on the left, it wasn't as if there was a really thoroughly established left winger that would stop him. And it was a shame because when you did speak to him, he was a very articulate, bright, engaging fella. You know, really nice guy. You cover a lot of players down the years. I would never have a bad word to say about him as a bloke. He was great. He was always, as I say, always had a twinkle in his eye. But I always thought that Franz was his own man. You know, even as a young fella, he was his own man. And I don't think Brian could intimidate him. I think Franz knew what he wanted to do. And I think Franz had a definite idea of his own value to the team and himself. And I think he was prepared to stick with that. And I think it made that relationship with his manager very fractured, where others would say, well, okay, and they'd bow down to it. He would actually say no because he knew what he was worth. And in the long run, it probably didn't help him. But he was quite a strong character. He knew what he wanted out of football, and he was prepared to fight for it. So, you know, that was a credit to him, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, as being a strong character, perhaps that had some influence on his career. He only made a little over 200, I think about 220 appearances. I'm going to go chronologically here, playing for Blackburn and then, of course, Forest, where he made 131 of those appearances. Sheffield Wednesday, West Ham, Newcastle United, Sheffield United, Leicester, I'll catch your breath here, Fletch, Villa, Bolton, West Brom, and then he had a very brief stint in Serie A for Reggiana. I don't know if you remember that. And I didn't even realize this, and this is Wikipedia, so I'm going to take this with a huge spoon of salt, unless you tell me this is legit, Fletch. Apparently, he finished his career, and our American listeners will enjoy this, with Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who I think are now in the USL.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But I think when you read out a list like that, the first thing it tells you is that when he was good, he was worth taking a chance on.
Yeah.
So coaches would have looked at him as a player and seen the natural ability and seen the glimpses of brilliance and thought, I can get the best out of him consistently. All managers think, I know what to do with him. And all of those managers would have taken a look and thought, he's worth a gamble, because if we can get 30 games out of him, consistent. Don't forget, he had a few injuries too, Franz. He was often injured. But managers felt that there was enough talent in there that if they could just harness that a little bit better, they'd have a player.
Yeah.
So I think it's why he played for the caliber of club that he did over the period of time that he did. But it was never there for that long, because the reality was that when he was on, he was on. When he was off, he was off. And there was no middle ground. You either got brilliance or you got chaos, and managers would soon tire of that. Because ultimately, you know, if you can have 11 consistent players, you're not going to be relegated. You're going to win more games than you lose. You're going to find a way to build something, which is what they're looking for. But if you've got a team full of hit and miss, then you're asking for trouble, aren't you? So not too many would want to carry that for any length of time.
Yeah, of course, that middle section of clubs as well. He played for those teams when they were in the old League One, which is, you know, is now obviously the Premier League. That would be the top division at the time. So, he certainly had the calibre. Wrapping up on Franz Carr, I asked us to hone in on one significant moment in a player's Forest career.
I think the period that I wouldn't choose a specific time. I have an image of Franz in my mind, and it's the rebirth team. It's the team that went to Arsenal and won in the FA Cup. The team that had the first cup run to the first semi-final at Hillsborough when they lost to Liverpool, and John Barnes was brilliant on the day. The team when Carr, Rice, Pearce, Colin Foster, Chettle, this team that developed in front of us, Paul Wilkinson, the home ales on the shirts. That for me was the Franz Carr period, because at that time, his light was shining the brightest in a Forest shirt. At that time, the fans thought that they'd found someone special, that the inconsistency would go, and he would go and be an England winger and would be John Robertson on the other side, the modern day version of John on the other side. We'd not realised at that point that the inconsistency would follow him all the way through. And there was such a buzz in the city at the time, A, for that team, because they'd been in the doldrums for a period of time, and now you've got this young, exciting side that was starting to make waves again. And he was, at that stage, a central figure in it. So it wouldn't be a particular match, but it would be a little sequence of games during that season where we all started to realise that this Forest team was onto something, and he was a significant part of it. And I don't think, from his perspective, analysing him, that he ever got back to that level again. So that, to me, was his halcyon period in a Forest shirt, and was never quite that special again.
Yep. Okay, fantastic. Great way to wrap Franz Carr. So like I said, listeners, you can find footage of Carr on YouTube. It's a little sparing, but it's out there. And I'd encourage you to go check it out.
If you go to YouTube and you watch those season reviews, kind of 87, 88, 88, 89, though, you will see Franz Carr. And and really, because it's a season review and they are highlights, you will see him making goals and doing all kinds of things. And you'll think, wow, how did he not play more? Because you're not seeing the rest of the game where he's shanking it into the River Trent. But God, if you want to see him, you can see him at his best in there, and you'll see those left-footed goals that you were talking about earlier.
That's a great suggestion, because it puts his overall contribution in context. So, absolutely. All right, that is Franz Carr. So let's move on to my pick for the 80s. I've gone with a player who was very influential for me as a kid. So regular listeners to the show will know that I'm still knocking about a little bit on the football field. Not as much as I used to, because Monday and certainly Tuesday, it hurts. But I still try and get out there when I can. And when I do, I'm still trying to play central midfield. And growing up as a kid, this was a player who I admired, who I felt like had incredible passing ability. He wasn't quite to the Glenn Hoddle level, but similar in style at least. I'm talking, of course, about Neil Webb.
It's Neil Webb getting it away for Forrest. Back. Stopped by Clough. Won by him. Chapman now, De Gaynor. Plenty of red shirts forward, and Neil Webb is further forward than any of them. There's Webb! Say to Tommy Gaynor, because he passed out to him so often and Tommy hadn't been able to gather the ball. That was a superlative ball in by Gaynor. And good, quick thinking and clever skills from Neil Webb.
So Fletch, what are your recollections of the lad from Reading, Neil Webb?
Well, I remember when they signed him, and I think they signed him from Portsmouth, 650,000, I think it was, at the time. And I remember being quite excited about the signing because Brighton was great in those days. It was the time when a first division club would happily go into the second division and they'd buy the best players and put them into the first division the following year and off you went. You don't see that anymore. Mm-hmm. The transfer market now is off to Europe and try and find the most expensive person you can find. There'd been a bit of speculation in the city during the course of the season that Neil was being lined up by Forrest. So, of course, everybody was keeping an eye on him, all the fans. And he was scoring plenty of goals from midfield, which is always exciting. If you can find a goal-scoring central midfield player, you've got a real chance. And he came in, and I remember pretty much hit the ground running. Never really missed a beat. And he really gave Forrest that little bit of class in the middle of the pitch. Went on to play for England, of course, and get the big move to Manchester United. I often wonder sometimes, he had the serious Achilles tendon injury. I wonder what the career would have been had he not suffered that, because the problem Neil had was Neil would gain weight. Mm-hmm. And I think the restrictions that were placed on him with the Achilles held him back, certainly in fitness terms, as the career progressed, and really held him back. You know, he wasn't the quickest to start with. And when he lost that yard of pace on the back of the Achilles tendon, it made it really difficult for him. It took a lot away from his game. But he was a really key player. And I mean, when you think about, you know, we touched on the cup finals, you know, particularly, I remember the pass he played through in 89 against Luton.
Yeah.
Which was top class. I mean, he gave Forrest that. And they'd not had that for a while, that ability to see a pass from the middle of the pitch and score a goal as well. And he was top class. I mean, when you think about that Forest team, at one stage they had Pierce, Walker, Hodge and Webb, all in the England side. Now, you think about that now. Mm-hmm. Four Forest players in the England side. And I mean, he was a key part of the England setup for a period of time, Neil. He was a very, very, very good player and an absolutely cracking fella off the pitch as well. I mean, he was the guy that would do the interviews and had a view and was just such a nice, nice individual that you only ever wanted good things to happen to Neil Webb.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, really good to hear. I mean, again, yeah. Listeners to the show know that even though I'm Forest through and through, I'm from Oxford originally. So, yeah, Webby was born in Reading and only about 20 miles from where I was born. And just a player I loved watching play. He made his debut for the Royals back in 1980, played 72 games, and I think is still to this day their youngest ever goal scorer. And then, as Fletch mentioned, got his move to Portsmouth. Played over 120 games there before heading to Forest. Again, as Fletch was mentioning, Neil Webb scored over 50 goals in actually fewer than 200 games, which for a central midfielder, I mean, for a centre forward, Fletch, yeah, is good going. That's an astonishing
I'd also like to know how many he made during that time for Nigel Clough as well.
Because, yes,
you know, he was the main man in that team. In many, many ways. You know, Stuart was the leader, Stuart was the captain, Nigel was the centre forward, all this. But Webby was the one that had the ball and made them tick and had that little bit of class. And he was a very, very, very important player during his time there. And they really missed him when he left. Because I think he developed to the stage where it was going to be virtually impossible for a team like Forest to replace him like for like. And of course,
absolutely,
then they landed on Roy Keane, didn't they?
So yes.
You know, in a crazy, but you see, Roy was a runner in those days. People think about Roy at Manchester United, you know, dominating central midfield in Champions League matches. But when he was a Forest player, Roy was raw. Roy would run beyond the striker and got by on energy and aggression and goals. He was a different player. So the Forest team changed a lot when they lost Neil. But He could play any pass and he could dictate the tempo of a match. You know, you could play in and out of Neil Webb. And when Neil Webb was on, he would be setting the agenda. He'd be dictating the way the game was and was a brilliant user of the football, both in terms of scoring goals, making goals, doing the simple things, and huge player for Forest during his time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned young Nige there, Nigel Clough, because, yeah, that was something that jumped out at me both at the time, Fletch, and also looking back on those days now, was just how in sync those two players were. I think Nigel Clough and Neil Ware were just on a different level in terms of how they saw the game, the space they created for themselves, the way they addressed the ball. I mean, they were two players who... they could make crisp 5-10 yard passes and keep things moving quickly. They could also open up their bodies and find a channel and play a 30, 35, 40 yard ball for a teammate, Webby in particular, and you know, just turn the game on its head, change the whole look and feel of a match. And the way that those two clicked, when they lost Neil Webb, not only did they lose a great player and everything and all the attributes that came with him, but you lost that connection as well, of course, with Nigel Clough as well.
I think when you think about his arrival, I mentioned that when we spoke about friends, I mentioned that mid to late 80s side that developed, and we'd gone from the team that got to the UEFA Cup semi-final, and he had to rebuild that. So Davenport went, Hodge went, Van Breukelen went, you know, Paul Hart went, Kenny Swain went. That team was essentially broken up. Chris Fairclough went. All that group went. And then he built the side. The early look of that team was Colin Foster at centre-back with a very young Des Walker. Stewart would be at left-back. It was a time where Gary Birkles was even still on the scene and playing centre-back in those days.
I remember.
right. You know, Paul Wilkinson would be the centre-forward. Brian Rice would be on the left. You know, Franz Carl would be on the right. You know, this was a really different... But then all of a sudden, Nigel came in. Steve Hodge came back. Neil Webb came in. And these players became the finishing touches to a team that now could challenge for trophies and could go to Wembley and could be a top three team in the old First Division. And he was one of the key pieces to go from being, you know, an above average team to be a really good team. He brought that bit of class. And then when you put him into the team, the rest of them went with him. You know, then Hodgie came back, and then eventually Brian Laws came to be at right back, and they started to work everything out. You know, all this team then developed to the side that we'll talk about in the next episode, the 90s team.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Webb was the phase where they went from being a team on the rise to a team that we all knew now could go to Wembley, could
absolutely
be a top four side. And that was massive because Forest hadn't been that. You know, they'd gone through the situation where they'd won the European Cups, and through the early 80s, they were a mid-table First Division team. And they were playing to crowds of 15,000, and they were selling their best players to stay afloat. You know, Peter Davenport famously was sold because the tax man needed paying. So they'd gone from that, and then Cluffy's Bairns appeared on the scene, and away they went. And the arrival of Neil Webb was that little bit of stardust being sprinkled, that little bit of class onto a team that needed it at that time.
I'm going to diverge here just for a moment, because whenever you and I get together, we always end up talking about Brian Clough, and I don't want this to be the Brian Clough show, but it's impossible to talk about this period of time or any significant period of time in Forest history without talking about Clough. And I saw the other day, I'm not sure which newspaper it was, talking about, you know, vote for the greatest manager of all time. And of course, some of the familiar names were in there. So Alex Ferguson, Bob Paisley, Cloughy's name was, of course, in the mix as well. And I think one of the things that marks Clough out is that, yes, the things that Sir Alex has done and that Bob Paisley has done and that one or two others have done were remarkable, but they did those things with teams where you would expect it. And other managers, you know, who've gone before or have come, well, not in the case of Ferguson, I was about to say who have come since, but managers who have gone before had also done something similar. In the case of United, you know, Sir Matt Busby, and Liverpool, of course, I've had several great managers down the years. With Forest, you did not expect it. Not only did you not expect it and had no right to expect it, but after creating a team that won the European Cup 2 years in a row, Cloughy then went ahead and rebuilt another fantastic team. And I think that's what marks Cloughy out as being something truly special.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm completely biased. So
that's okay.
I would say it's Cloughy, but I would agree with you on everything you said. But I would also add that it's not just about the statistics. If you looked at statistics alone and you went for trophies, you'd have a different argument. I think you look at him being a total package. I always say that, you know, the closest to him. And I don't know a great deal about Shankly because he was before my time. So I don't really know what Liverpool was like before he came. But what I do know is that it's a bigger city. It was a bigger club. So you've got the potential to do great things. What Ferguson did at Aberdeen was, in many ways, the comparable thing to what Brian did at Forest.
Yeah.
Because Aberdeen are never going to do that.
No, I agree. Again. Yeah.
But what I'd say with Brian, he did it at Derby. He did it at Forest. To win back-to-back European Cups is astonishing. If you look at the number of teams that have done that, you know, Manchester United never won back-to-back European Cups.
Mm-hmm.
So he's done the kind of things that big clubs can't even do. But I always thought he played the game the right way. He was a tremendous developer of footballers. If you look at Mourinho, Mourinho buys players. So don't give me Mourinho. Mourinho buys players. You know, Ferguson developed players. Ferguson helped develop the class of 92. Clough built teams around players that he picked up from wherever,
mm-hmm.
non-league or whatever it was, players who were finished, raw materials, he'd have a go. So I think that sets him apart. And then you bring the charisma, the character, total package. For me, he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, again, yeah. You and I are both biased. All right, so focusing on this team that he built, this second incredible team in which Neil Webb was an important part. Webb was at Forest from 85 to 89. Made almost 150 appearances, scored 47 goals. Again, a remarkable statistic. Scored, of course, on his debut against Luton, and Luton would go on to be a key opponent for Neil Webb. I'm going to highlight his key moment for Forest, Fletch, as being the 1989 League Cup final. I think this was when Webb was at his very best, in his total pomp. And, of course, it secured his move, as you mentioned already, to Manchester United, which we'll come on to in just a moment. But you've already mentioned Tommy Gaynor playing out on the right wing. In 1989 Cup final, he provided a fantastic cross from the right wing that Neil Webb plucked out of the air with one foot and side-footed home with the other. The go-ahead goal that would ultimately set Forest on the path to victory in the Cup final that year. Really significant moment and fantastic goal, Fletch.
Yeah, it was. It was... If you remember rightly, the first half didn't go particularly well. They were losing the final for quite a while. And it took a little bit of class to get them back into it, which they had in abundance, of course, at that time. They got England players. I mean, they were the better team man for man. But I think it's always the mark of the player that when you need it, can you do it? When the stage is big, can you do it? It goes back to the, when you're 3-0, we can all do it. But when you're 1-0 down at Wembley and you're under pressure and you're expected to win, can you create the situation where you can deliver what your team needs? And he was good at doing that. You know, he did it. The thing that always, it's not even a goal. I was stood on the Trent End one Saturday, and it was the season he left, and the ball had gone into the Trent End, and Webb had gone to fetch it. So it must have been a corner, wanted it thrown back, and the entire Trent End, to the tune of You'll Never Walk Alone, started singing sign on with a pen in your hand. Well, because you've got a Man United at the end. And he just had to stand there and listen because the ball wouldn't come back. And the whole ground was singing at him that he'd got a sign. Everybody knew he was going to go. But it was kind of the last ditch and the crowd let him know. And he was getting a bit of stick at the time as well from the crowd because they knew that he was going to be off to Man United. But that moment sticks in my mind. And the other thing that sticks in is a slightly somber note. But I was at Old Trafford for the Hillsborough replay in 89. And Liverpool went ahead and Webber equalised that day. Mm-hmm. And I remember when he scored, I turned to my granddad and I said, that is the most irrelevant semi-final goal that anybody's ever going to score. Because Forest can't win today. Forest can't win today. Liverpool need to go to Wembley and they need to win the FA Cup. Because this is for them. We were there, not as Forest supporters really, to try and sing the team to Wembley. It was because we'd been at Hillsborough weeks earlier and we felt we had to go for the replay. And when Neil scored, I remember thinking, I've just seen a Forest player score a goal in an FA Cup semi-final to make it 1-1. And I really wish he hadn't, because Liverpool had to go through.
Yeah.
It had to be their year. Yeah. That was just my view. I'm not saying that's what Forest fans feel like, because everybody's has their own memories and their own thoughts of that time. But mine was, you know, great, I'm really glad you've done it, but it's not, it can't, this can't be. You know, look, this, we're here for Liverpool. We're here to think about the people that perished at Hillsborough, and this is, so that goal, that's his goal that sticks in my mind, just because of the nature of the occasion and what it meant for everybody that was there that day.
Yeah, it's a great recollection. I think you mentioned, Fletch, that Webb also went on to be a significant player for England. It's funny, one of the memories that sticks in my mind was his debut, his full start debut against Turkey. England pummeled Turkey 8-0 that day. It was back in the day when Turkey were whipping boys of Europe. And Webby actually scored on his full debut for England as well. And that was, I remember as a kid, kind of jumping up and down and being so excited for him.
Well, let me tell you an England story, and this is a true story. And the late Graham Taylor is not here to give his version, unfortunately. But I know this to be a fact. Graham, a kickoff, used to like to play a percentage ball. So he wanted the ball, knocking back to the midfield player, who would hit the diagonal towards the corner flag to get the opposition boxed in, and Liverpool and England could play from there. And Neil Webb refused to do it.
Really?
Because he said, I cannot do that. He said, if I do that, my manager at my club will drop me from the team. he said, because we don't play that way. We don't play that way.
That's great.
He said, a Brian Clough midfield player cannot knock a 50-yard ball out of play. And bearing in mind, you're trying to get it out of play.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I can't do that. So there was a big standoff between the England manager and his midfield player, because the club manager had principles, and it was something that was a problem for Neil. That Brian had it, even when you went to play for your international team, Brian expected you to represent your club side and do what was right for your club side, for his team. So Neil had a problem with that. And now whether that ultimately affected the amount of games he would have played for Graham, I don't know.
Mm.
But that was an issue at the time that was raised. And Brian had said to him, if you do it, you're not going. Brian and Toy, so I will pull you out of the squad if you do that.
Interesting.
But that's not the way you play the game.
Yeah.
And it was an issue for a period for Neil, where he was in conflict. He wanted to please the England manager, which he needed to do, but he also had to please his club manager, and he was between a rock and a hard place. There was nothing he could do. He couldn't win, could he?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If he doesn't hit the diagonal out of play, he's not playing for England. If he hits the diagonal out of play, he's not playing for Forest. So what do you do? I don't know. I mean, Forest pay the wages, so I suppose you answer the question.
That's Hobson's choice for sure. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Well,
actually, it was Cluffy's choice, which is a slightly different version of this Hobson's choice that you talk about. Yeah, I tell you, I know what I'd be doing.
Me too. So you mentioned club's affection for him again. Urban legend is when United finally picked up Webby for £1.5 million in 89. Clough offered to pay to keep him. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but
possibly may have done. Possibly.
Webb started his United career with a blistering chest volley combo against the then reigning Premier League champions Arsenal, setting United on the way to a 4-1 victory that opening day of the season. It looked like everything in the garden was rosy, but as you mentioned, Fletch,
people forget that Lee Martin's winner in the cup final is from a Neil Webb diagonal. So when you think the cup final that United won, the first trophy for Sir Alex, or Alex as he was back then.
Yeah.
It's Neil Webb's diagonal ball that Lee Martin runs onto, controls, and volleys into the back of the net, which was in the replay, Les Seeley in goal. It was Neil Webb's pass out to Lee Martin.
And of course, Les Seeley is the goalkeeper that Neil Webb put that fantastic goal past in the 89 cup final. So it all kind of hangs together. He should have kicked it out of the play there, Fletch. He should have kicked it.
He was trying to.
As you mentioned, though, his career was blighted with injury. He didn't make that many appearances for the Red Devils, only 75 in total. Did, however, win the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup in 91 with United, and the aforementioned FA Cup in 1990 and the League Cup in 92. And then he returned to Nottingham Forest, played the last season in the Premier League. Unfortunately, Forest got relegated, and then had a pretty big impact for Frank Clark the following year in helping the team get back to the top flight. But interestingly, Fletch, never played for Forest again. After Forest got promoted back to the Premier League, that was the end of Webb's journey with Forest.
I think back to the year he came back, and he was delighted to be back. You know, he was thrilled to be back.
Not the same.
Never the same.
No.
He had one game, which was away at Leeds that year. Forest won really well. And Forest looked like Forest, and he looked like Neil Webb.
Yeah.
And we wondered that day whether that was going to be the catalyst to kick them on, and unfortunately it wasn't. He had a real problem with his fitness when he came back. And I know that Frank had a constant battle with him about the shape he was in.
Mm.
Now, whether that was something that he couldn't do anything about at that stage of his career, or whether he'd just kind of run out of love with it, because I know that the final months at Man United weren't happy for him by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
And he could never quite find it again. And I think when they got into the Premier League, or the old First Division, the Premier League, I think it was, we were in the Premier League then. He wasn't at that level anymore.
No.
As a Championship player the year before, okay, but still not consistent. You know, I just think it was the end for him. You know, the best days were behind him. The Achilles had robbed him of some of his prime, which he never got back. And when he came back, there was a tremendous amount of nostalgia linked to it.
Absolutely.
Could he come back and save them? You know, if you think about it, back then, you know, Nigel came back on loan, you know,
that's right.
When Stuart was in charge, the nostalgia was running through the place.
Yeah.
And we are nostalgic. You know, I think Forest fans are nostalgic.
Des Walker returns and Dawson returns. And
we love all that. You know, when Neil came back,
Reedy.
We all wanted to believe that he could be Neil Webb circa 1989.
Yeah.
We all knew that he couldn't. And he tried, but it just didn't work. But I tell you what, he was still as charming as ever. He was still as accessible as ever. He was the same fella, but he just wasn't the same footballer. And that was the problem.
So after that second spell with Forest, Webb went on loan to back to Reading again, the team who started his professional career, Swindon for a short spell, Hong Kong for an even shorter spell before he signed for Grimsby, and then had a stint with a couple of non-league teams, Aldershot Town, and as a player coach at Weymouth, and finally Reading Town. So very, very classy player. I have some fantastic memories of him, both in the Forest shirt and his England jersey as well. And I agree with you. A lot of nostalgia in regards to his return to the City Ground. He wasn't the same player, but I still, to this day, wear number 8 when I play because of Neil Webb.
Yeah.
So,
good choice.
All right, Fletch. Well, thank you so much, mate, for taking this trip down memory lane with me. For listeners who are unfamiliar with those Forest players, hopefully that Who Are Ya gives you a little background on a couple of them. Fletch, again, thank you so very much, mate. Hey, I want to mention before we let you go, that you're doing this fantastic a virtual evening with series. You were talking with Michael Dawson, Andy Reid, and JJ, Jermaine Genus.
Yes. The next one is booked in, and we're going to be talking to three of the lads that won the First Division under Dave Bassett. So we're going to be sitting down with Steve Stone, Colin Cooper, and Kevin Campbell to talk about that. So that's going to be available on the Forest website, YouTube, and wherever you can. So I'm really looking forward to sitting down and speaking to those fellas.
It's on the first one was brilliant. And I think the first one was brilliant because those lads came through together. And there was obviously a lot of camaraderie there and a lot of sincere friendship as well. And it really came through in the conversation.
What we are going to do is we're going to stick to three players from the same squad. So we get them talking about their time. So all three are going to be from the same group. So obviously Michael, Andy, and Jay all came together. You think about that team, they all won the First Division together and played together. That, I think, was the last team that played and partied together. That was a lot of nights out that year. They were a very together group on and off the pitch. So we're looking forward to doing that. What I would say, just on the back of the first one, I had a very emotional Paul Hart ring me a couple of days after, say that he'd sat and watched it with his wife, Vicky, and was so touched by everything the boys had said about him. Which made it even more special. You know, the fact that Paulie watched it and liked it and it meant something to him was great. I know it meant an awful lot to the three guys as well. So that was brilliant.
You know, what's interesting is that I heard the boys talking about training methods. I heard them talking about the way that you conduct yourself and, you know, the discipline around the club and making sure that people represented Forest in the right way. And I thought they were talking about Brian Clough. I thought they were talking about kind of the echoes of Clough and the structures that he put in place. And to a certain extent they were, because of course Paul Hart was a product of that. But when when they went on to talking about Harty, I was like, wow, I always liked Harty as a man, both as a player and a manager. But yeah, they had an enormous amount of respect for him, and it was really touching to hear that, them talk about that.
The next one's going to be on this Sunday, and if you don't get the chance to see it on Sunday, you can see it on YouTube. It's on the website, so you're not going to make an appointment to be with us when it's initially broadcast. It's kind of there for posterity, so people can catch up with it if they're not available to be with us.
So folks can check out those nights in. What are they called again, Fletch?
Virtual evening with.
There we go. Virtual evening with nights in. Down the boozer with Fletch, but at home. by following Fletch on Twitter. It's at @dfletchersport, I think. Is that right?
It is.
There you go. On the ball. Fletch, thanks ever so much, mate. Really appreciate it. I know how pressured your time is, so to take a lot of time to talk about Forest players with us, it means an enormous amount to me, and I know our listeners are going to appreciate it greatly. So thank you, my friend.
My pleasure.
All right, take care, be well.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, this is Shane Malcolm.
And this is Jordan Schweitzer.
We're the creators of Boot Bags.
Fashionable, durable, washable. Boot Bags are the most convenient way to carry your cleats to and from training or games. Check us out at bootbags.us.
You're listening to the Forest Fancast Podcast.